interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crowe, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Monday to you. And it is a Monday, July 29 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, kicking off live on 1037 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And for the next 3 hours, we sprint toward football season with you from inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Big show today. LSU football, Cajuns football, Saints football, and some news on the LHS 2A front that emanated from right here, Turnleys Catholic High School in Lafayette. But we have to start with a split screen. We'll begin with LSU athletics and, well, the university, and a disconnect that is now there. We'll go with Cam Meredith and the Saints and the MLB trade deadline. You want to get a word in edgewise? Give us a holler now. Don't wait on me today. Call us at 706-0111. Let's go with Scott Woodward first and LSU as we spin the wheel. The fund transfer policy put in place by Joe Oliva, one that transferred funds from the athletic department to the university, is being discontinued. From 2012 to 2017, that was about $50 million that went back to LSU. Love the university. Well, no longer. And by the way, the original guarantee was $36 million. You could say that athletics outkicked the coverage there. And Scott Woodward did say today that this is not sustainable and that there's a dangerous precedent for a university to rely on those funds. Is this directly tied to the stink that was raised by LSU unveiling a $28 million locker room for football last week? I don't think it's quite that simple, but the timing is more than just a little curious, right? I would have to think that there was some umbrage taken. The athletic department, through the fundraising arm that is TAF, raises these private dollars, and then pretty widely, I think a lot of academians, Professor Robert Mann, we're looking at you, brother. A lot of a stink was raised by people of that ilk saying that here I go vacuuming again, and here we go. The library needs this, that, and the other. And so it's funny, isn't it? The first day of the next work week, before this next school year starts, we're just going to go ahead and cut this off right at the nose. What I do know is this. Scott Woodward ain't playing around. And the things he's done so far to get organized, the things he's done so far to maybe boost some morale, if you will. And I think at the end of the Oliva era, it was a morale that probably needed some boosting. As Virg Allsbury has said on this show before, there was some healing that needed to occur, especially maybe in the aftermath of some of the things that came out with LSU basketball and Will Wade last year in the spring. Yeah. I think right now Scott Woodward continues to do things that is going to preserve, protect, and grow the athletic side. And now they're not going to chip back in, CD, to academics. Now they're going to make sure that there's not, 90,000 people, 103,000 people that are going to watch a chemistry exam? I think we beat that drum a few times last week. So intriguing news, but something that is definitely self-preservation and, let's be honest, there's some cannibalism that's going on. Drive around this state. You see it the same way that I do. The Fierce for the Future campaign. Academics wants theirs. Athletics wants theirs. And now, well, there's a separation of church and state. Wonder what you think about that. 706-0111. But you can't lie. The timing's awfully funny. Oh, really? The locker room's a little too showy for you? That's too ostentatious, too much revenue that came in here. This is too nice for you. Okay, you get nothing. Back of the line, academics. Just funny how that worked out, isn't it? All right, let's keep going. We spin the wheel. Now we're going to land on the Saints. All of five games That's what Cam Meredith played in for New Orleans. Excuse me. The former Chicago Bear came over a little bit beleaguered with knee injuries, and he leaves the other side of the turnstile kind of the same. This was never something that came to fruition. In fairness, the Saints didn't sink a lot of money into that experiment. But what it does mean, I'll let go what Clint said during the two-minute drill, the emergence of Keith Kirkwood, who played a good bit in 2018, Emmanuel Butler stepping onto the scene, and a name I didn't hear during the two-minute drill, I surely hope this means that second-year wideout Tre'Quan Smith out of Central Florida is ready to blossom into his own. And let us not forget, I said it during Friday's show at Ruffino's on the River, the most forgotten man on the Saints roster, Ted Ginn Jr. And then Jared Cook, as a receiving tight end, kind of augments everything. So if they have enough firepower, then they don't need to wait on Cam Meredith. And clearly, we learned today they're not going to wait on Cam Meredith. So this experiment didn't last long. It certainly never really bore much fruit. And the Saints will move on to the future of the receiver position outside of Michael Thomas. Final spin of the wheel will take us to the MLB trade deadline, and it's coming up Wednesday early afternoon. What does that mean? Less than 46, 45 hours for the Houston Astros, the other 29 MLB teams to get their business done. And Clint, already we have seen some movement. The big news yesterday, Marcus Stroman moving on from the Jays. He was linked to the Astros, but instead he'll be heading to the National League.
Yeah, he'd be heading back home, which is it's a cool move, but at the same time, it definitely caught Marcus Stroman a little bit off guard. Not long before the Yankees took on the Red Sox, he got traded over. When I saw that, I was like, whoa, this is the first big shoe to drop when it comes to the trade deadline, which has been relatively quiet as of late. What's going to happen next in the trade whenever the trade deadline inches closer? Obviously, I think we could talk about Noah Syndergaard is probably the next big thing, especially when you look at what happened with the New York Mets getting Marcus Stroman, which was, again, weird move, but I can understand it.
Now, hold on now. You mentioned the Yankees-Red Sox. That's really got nothing to do with the price of tea in China. The man's going to play for the Mets.
Wait, yes, but I was thinking about it because of the fact that that was like the game that was on TV that night on the Four Letter Network.
Your stream of consciousness delivery of sports reporting right now, confusing our listeners, but there he's not going to the AL. He's not staying in the same AL East division. Yeah. He's going to the Mets, and I'm glad you brought up Thor, because suddenly this would seemingly make Noah Syndergaard all the more expendable. I can tell you, as a guy who's heading to Atlanta later this week to watch a Braves game, Braves country feels like they are in the driver's seat to get Noah Syndergaard. So we'll see if an NL East team is strengthened. What I do know is this. All this talk we've had of Mad Bum, Clint, Madison Bumgarner ending up in Astro, I hope Luno and company could strike late, because there really aren't a lot of rumblings right now out of Houston. So if something's going to happen, they're not going to let any loose sips sink ships over there in H-Town. It is quiet on the home front.
It really is quiet, and justifiably so. I mean, that's what I've heard as well, and nothing really going on with Madison Bumgarner talks on either side, really. It feels like the Giants, and mind you, a lot of that has to do with the fact that the Giants performing maybe a little bit better than expected after the All-Star break. So I think that's a big reason why now it looks like they're going to hold on to Bumgarner for the long haul.
It's an odd number year. Are they allowed to win a world championship by the Bay?
I guess. I mean, they're going to have to – the Dodgers might have something to say about it.
I'll let you phone a friend and get to Chet Yoder. Then you can get back to me on that. Speaking of Chet Yoder.
Yeah.
If you thought I was going to forget about this, you're kidding yourself.
Okay.
Do you remember 4 years ago today, my friend? Wing eating contest.
That was 4 years ago?
Chet Yoder, halftime. The Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey. You feel old?
Yeah, I feel old. And I'm about to say that is newly remodeled Hooters at that. So everything's changed over there as well.
I feel really damn old. But that came up in my Facebook timeline today. I tried to send it back into the transfer portal. Alas, it is a real thing. Let me tell you about our real live guest today. James Moran, Tiger Ag Magazine at 4:30. So you'll get James in about 18 minutes. At 5:15, Ruffin Rodrigue. 5:45, we're taking you to the nation's capital. Ross Dellinger, SportsIllustratedSI.com. And at straight up 6 o'clock, Nico Yanko, Deputy Director of Athletics for the UL Raging Cajuns. Big show on a Monday. Football season is upon us. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more, including your sink or swim question of the day. He's Clint. I'm Ben, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
What dog days of summer? Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love will get you through it all with the latest concerning your favorite teams on the field and on the recruiting trail. Now, back to the show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
It's about time to, I think, retire that liner. I mean, seriously, let's give it an AARP card and throw it a party. Make it wear some pants that don't quite go all the way down to its ankles. It is not summer anymore. It is football season, and we are back. Bumper to Bumper Sports, taking you home on a Monday on 103.7 The Game. Clint, you know that what I say is true. It's the 29th of July. It's the final Monday of July. We're kicking this thing off. I mean, real soon.
Exactly. I mean, you got Saints training camp underway right now. LSU and the Cajuns reporting to camp on Thursday. So a lot of things to kind of get to over the next couple of days before talking season's done. Time to put the pads on and make it matter.
So here's our plan. We'll have James Moran about 13 or 14 minutes from now. The latest on LSU as they gear up for fall camp 2019. We'll give you everything that happened and our best interpretation of it from Lafayette and Turlings Catholic High School with the select schools and what they ratified today in their constitution. That'll come your way in about 30 minutes, and it's straight up 5 o'clock. You're going to hear from Saints head coach Sean Payton and a couple of the members of Houdat Nation as well from live on Airline Drive in Metairie. But right about now, we love to get the juices flowing. We like to get you thinking a little bit. Hopefully not too much, especially for a Monday. Let's get the music, then I'll get to the question.
Exciting and new.
Clint, we could both agree, last year, first year for Billy Napier and the Cajuns, UL wins the Western Division of the Sun Belt. Fact.
It's a scientific fact.
LSU does not win the Western Division. And yet, expectations for both on the rise going into this season, which is why I ask, which has the better chance of winning their conference this year? Is it LSU or is it UL? Which is ready to do something that it hasn't in quite some time? Last time LSU turned the trick was December of 2011. The Raging Cajuns did it several times under Mark Hudspeth here in Cajun country. Which one has the better chance of doing it this fall? LSU or UL? Tigers or Cajuns? Call us up. Let us know. Let's get interactive. 706-0111. Clint, I was selfish. I took the reins. I went first on Friday. You get the lead today.
I appreciate that, Ben, and I think I got to wind up going with the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. It's going to sound like a homer take, but you got to think about it. What's the big difference between the Cajuns and LSU in terms of their division, the division they play in? The SEC West.
The Bama factor.
Well, that and the SEC West is incredibly stacked. What we're seeing right now, obviously, Mississippi State, you just don't know what they could be. Texas A&M, their team that's on the rise year two under Jimbo Fisher. A lot of interesting things going on in the SEC West. When you look at what's going on in the Sun Belt West Division, it feels like right now you've got two top contenders right now, Arkansas State and the Cajuns. And depending on what year it is and where it's played at, that determines who's probably going to wind up winning the West Division. But I could see that thing wind up changing in the not-too-distant future. But I have to say, I feel like the Cajuns have the best chance to get the conference title game and pull off an upset because of the fact they're playing in a little bit of a weaker division in the Sun Belt West as opposed to the SEC West when you look at LSU and, like you said, that Bama factor.
LSU has won three national championships in football, all of them legitimate, not like Bama put it on a milk carton style national championships. Since the turn of the millennium, they've won two of them. Clint, give me the years of those two national championships. I'm going somewhere with this.
All right, am I with Alabama?
No. Oh, LSU won football national championships.
03 and 07.
Those are odd number years?
Yes.
The odd-yeared schedule is always kinder to LSU, okay, at least post-Y2K. The reason? Don't ask me to explain it for you. I've just accepted it as a fact, especially in the post-January 9, 2012 era. LSU plays Bama better at Bama. I know that game's not going to be at night this year. I actually think that might be a good thing, as I told you when we learned that a few months ago. But here's the other thing that lines up, CD. Florida, home game. Auburn, home game. Texas A&M, home game. This is the better year of a schedule for LSU. When you compare it, I know it sounds good to have Bama at home. That one hasn't gone in LSU's favor since 2010, okay? And they haven't scored the last two times. Haven't scored at all in the ball game. I'm going to tell you that LSU's chances this year are as good as they have been probably since 2011, 2012, 2013, the Mettenberger era, and then the 2011 Supernova season. This is the best chance LSU has had since then. Even 2015, when they went into the bye week undefeated and Leonard Fournette had his Heisman taken away by Derrick Henry in Tuscaloosa. I'm going to tell you that LSU's got as good of a chance as they've had, like I said, in about six seasons. But still, yeah, I'm not an idiot. I would agree with you. I think the answer to this question is the Cajuns. I just wanted to give you a lot of ammunition why there's a hell of a chance for LSU to do it this year. Even before you get to the continuity of quarterback and offensive coordinator, even before you get to the ridiculous talent that's lining up at receiver, in the secondary, in the pass rush, along the defensive line, even before you start talking X's and O's, Jimmy's and Joe's, the schedule for LSU this year is pretty kind. It's not easy. It never will be in the SEC West, but it's stacked the way you want it. You'll notice I didn't say Texas. This question has nothing to do with that. This is about winning the conference. Clint and I both think it's the Cajuns, but I think LSU's got a hell of a chance to do it this year in the conference where it just means more. Let's get out to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Enough of me. Ron, what do you think?
I'm with you. I'm with UL for different reasons. You know, if they get a shot at Appalachian State again, you know, probably be a different game. Billy Napier's second year, so he poses, I guess, his will on the team more than he did last year. And this may be a crazy one, but I think LSU maybe have one or two pitfalls that they may stumble. And actually, one of the games I'm concerned about is maybe even the Vanderbilt game. You know, but I, as far as the question, I'm going with the Cajuns. So.
Ron, I appreciate it. Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Strong, out of the gate. Ron leading us off. Hey, we enjoyed that. Let's do it again. Back out to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Chad, thank you for waiting. Is it LSU or UL?
Ben, man, it was a pretty close one. I have a lot of faith in LSU this year, but I'm going UL, man. They don't have a Nick Saban across the board or Jimbo Fish on the other side. Obviously, the SEC West is the best conference by far. And, Ben, you know what's brought to my attention? I love the 2:30 slot against LSU and Bama. It was my attention that Bama, all the Bama, their losses have been at 2:30. They haven't lost at night, I think it was, but their losses have been at the 2:30 slot, and I think that bodes well for LSU coming in again. They play well away from Tiger Stadium. But I hate to listen, man. Thank you, Ben.
Chad, thank you. You know what? Clint, we'll fact check this in the break. I don't know why, but it feels like at least one of those two losses to Hugh Freeze and Ole Miss was a night game, with your boy Bo Wallace out there balling.
I'm almost certain as well.
Could be that it was a 2:30 game that just finished in the shadows and in the dark, and that's swaying my memory. But Chad's point is still valid. I can recall some of those games. The one that stands out is Bama at South Kakalaka. Steven Garcia leading the charge, and the Gamecocks beat number one Alabama. Definitely the Tide have been at least a little more vulnerable in the 2:30 games against Texas A&M and Johnny Football back in the gap. So, yes, it does happen. It's not a bad point there from Chad. Another good one he made, and I'll ride this one out into our second break of the program. There's not a Saban on the opposing sideline. The dean right now of Sunbelt Coaches had the chance to sit down and talk with him for a little bit, as Blake Anderson at Arkansas State. But to Chad's point, the Sabans of the Sun Belt don't stick around because they get jobs up the ladder. It happened at App State this past season. It happened at Troy, and it continues to be a bit of a stepping stone football league. Cajun fans are right now kind of hoping that's not going to happen with Billy Napier, right? Knocking on wood, praying the novena, just doing what you got to do to keep Billy the Kid here in the Hub City for a while. And I think there's a great chance of that happening. But it's a good point from Chad. Right now, the Cages have a chance to become a bit of a juggernaut. It starts with continuously winning your division, but certainly it expands to winning your conference. So Ron, Chad, me and Clint, we're all in on the Cajuns being maybe having the better chance at this point. But it is close, and I like LSU's shot this year. We'll have to see how things line up, obviously, with health, attrition, offensive development. But, yeah, I'm telling you, odd number of years with LSU football. You better not hit your snooze button. I will be right back in, no sleeping at all, on James Moran, the editor of Tiger Rag Magazine. He joins us to talk LSU football plus the news of the day with Scott Woodward and LSU Athletics. So stick with us. More Bumper to Bumper Sports coming right back at you on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We are oh so close to August, and that kind of makes it feel like football season is in the on deck circle. I think our next guest can relate to that, even if I butchered some prepositions. He'll forgive it. He's a writer. Let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. James Moran of Tiger Rag Magazine is our guest. How are you, James?
Doing well, Ben. Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing fine. Did you get to I know you're from the Empire State. Did you have a trip to the Mecca this summer?
I did. It was actually weirdly hot up there when I went, but played a lot of golf, frequented some casinos. It was a good time, but now vacation is over and football has returned.
All right, just the one more on your trip. Do you pay for your own drinks in casinos in New York?
No. Not if you're using the establishment. You do not.
I thought you were going to say not if you are winning. I'll just let you know that I was in Pittsburgh one time, and we got hit up while we were actually playing, and I didn't like that. I don't know if I want to go back.
No, not the one I went to.
Reasons to stay away from Pittsburgh. All right, let's get to the news of the day. Scott Woodward announces, and there's a great story about it at TigerRag.com, the fund transfer policy put in place by Joe Oliva. These are funds going from the athletic department to the university. It has been discontinued. I'll first ask this. How much connectivity, if any, is there to the reception of last week's unveiling of the locker room?
None. I think that, well, our Tyler Nunez wrote the story, and I instructed him to ask about the fund transfer policy because I thought it fit with everything, the conversation that was going on, but I think this is something that LSU Athletics has been kind of, hey, look, they're going to say they're reassessing it or whatever was the official statement LSU put out today through a different reporter. But, you know, Scott Woodward basically called it a dangerous precedent and said that they cannot continue or sustain what they were doing. I don't think this means that LSU Athletics is done giving any money to the university, but I think the annual $10 million check that they've been cutting very publicly under Joe Oliva is not going to continue. At least that's my understanding from the interview we did with Scott, that he said kind of point blank that it's not the athletics department job to bail out a state school. And, you know, if you can agree with that or not agree with that, but he's been pretty consistent about that. And that's it. See, you know, I do think that he's going to, you know, if asked on a specific thing, maybe you could see something worked out, or maybe they're going to keep doing it a smaller number. But he made it very clear that the way it existed from 2012 to 2017, where they gave them about $50 million over a five-year span, that is going to be done away with.
Hey, before we move into fall camp and LSU football, I guess your early assessment, first couple of months of Woodward as AD, what would you say?
I think he is what he was kind of portrayed to be when he came in. He's a guy that wants, you know, is going to push for the best facilities. I mean, I know they just unveiled their $28 million football ops building, though obviously that was a Joe Oliva-started project and, you know, funded by TAF and all that stuff. But he made it pretty clear that his big goal is to invest in the student-athletes, and I think that's what they're going to continue doing under his leadership. Obviously, we'll know more about him whenever a coaching vacancy opens up in one of the major sports. And obviously his reputation precedes him as kind of a big game hunter. We got guys like Jimbo Fisher and Buzz Williams to Texas A&M on huge deals. But I think so far he is pretty much what he was kind of advertised to be, a guy that's going to, you know, vehemently advocate for the LSU athletic department. He's obviously followed through on his word to bring beer and wine to Tiger Stadium, which is something he talked about in his introductory press conference. Now we know that that policy is in place. But I would say he's pretty much been what he's advertised to be in the early going.
Our guest is the editor of Tiger Rag Magazine, James Moran, with us on 103.7 The Game. James, how much of an adjustment, learning curve, transition, whatever applies for you, how much of that will there be for LSU's offense during this fall camp, given the fact that Joe Brady has entered the fray?
Well, I mean, I think there's certainly – obviously it helps that they have the entire spring that he was there and the spring to help. I'm sure there will be some, but I think the things that really lessen that learning curve is, one, the fact that you have a quarterback who's very comfortable with it, Joe Burrow. That's, to me at least, is the biggest one. He ran a similar offense in high school. He ran some very similar offense under Urban Meyer at Ohio State. Urban Meyer's obviously considered one of the guys who kind of created this modern spread offense, or at least one of the guys that best implemented it in the college game. I think there's going to be some learning curve in terms of, you know, maybe the younger receivers, maybe in terms of the offensive line. But I think the presence of Joe Burrow, that continuity of, you know, Steve Ensminger still being there as the play caller, Joe Burrow still being there as the quarterback, I think that kind of solves a lot of your issues. I think it was honestly a bigger problem last year when you had a new quarterback, a new running back, new wide receivers. You know, it was a lot of first-time starters on last year's offense, whereas this year, you know, they seem like they have enough veterans at key positions, whether it's Justin Jefferson at receiver or Burrow at quarterback or Clyde Edwards-Helaire at running back, or obviously, you know, Lloyd Cushenberry and four starters coming back on the O-line. That doesn't mean the offense is going to be, you know, running like a machine-like efficiency from day one, but I do think you're less worried about it because they have enough veterans at every position group to kind of bring some of the younger guys along.
James, this time a year ago, everybody was salivating about Caleb Von Chastisaw coming in as the premier pass rusher. What should be expected of him after basically a year on the shelf being injured?
Well, that's really kind of the great unknown, right? I mean, to me, what will separate this defense from being good and potentially being great is the ability for them to just line Caleb Von Chastisaw up on the outside and have him win one-on-one or two-on-one. Because really what can make this defense fun is if Chaisson is a menace off of one edge where you know the opposing offensive line is going to have to shade in their direction. Because then you can start using all these different kind of chess piece type players, as I call them, guys like Michael Divinity, guys like Grant Delpit, guys like Jacoby Stevens, kind of where you can then bring them, you can then kind of use the offense's predictability in that they're going to try to shift and have to slide their protection towards Chaisson, and then kind of create your own weak spots to rush through, whether it's a guy like Divinity who's going to play inside linebacker. Maybe you can, you know, kind of use him in an A-gap blitz because you know that guard's got to reach so that tackle can reach and get out on Chaisson. Maybe it's, you know, they put Stevens on the other side, or they put Grant Delpit and Stevens on different sides and let them kind of play off of Chaisson. Basically, you know, I think LSU's plan defensively is that they have so many kind of multi-talented pieces that they're still trying to figure out how they all fit. But a lot of it has to start with Chaisson, and if he can be that premier edge rusher that you mentioned. And if he is, then all those other pieces are suddenly just added bonus where, you know, you can get guys like Delpit and Stevens and Divinity in one-on-one situations with running backs and tight ends where you know they can win.
Your level of confidence, James, in replacing what LSU had with its PATs and field goals a year ago and moving to a youngster at that position?
You know, it's funny. I mean, aside from the offensive line, which I think is still a unit that really needs to improve, this team's biggest question mark might actually be kicker. I mean, you know, you kind of scoff at that notion, but this team wasn't more than a 7 or 8 win team without the consistency they got from Cole Trazy. I mean, that guy made big kicks. I mean, he made, what, 5 or 6 field goals in that Georgia game. He made, obviously, the game-winning kick against Auburn in that game that, to me, was probably still their most pivotal win of the season in terms of where it launched them to. And I don't know. I mean, Cade York seems like a guy with a big leg who's going to come in here, but can a true freshman handle the job? It's, you know, maybe a guy like Avery Atkins, who was their kickoff specialist. We know he's got a big leg. Could he be in the mix? Connor Culp still around. I don't know. To me, that kicker spot, you know, it sounds weird to say, but the kicker spot is definitely one of the big keys, because we remember before last year, place kicking was a big issue for LSU. I mean, they really set themselves back in that 2017 team with some of the points they left on the field. Now, maybe it's a good thing because they'll be more aggressive in the red zone. Probably, you know, it was almost kind of like they were too comfortable settling for field goals sometimes with how automatic Cole Tracy was. But you still would rather have that guy that you know can make those kicks than not. So that's definitely one competition I'm going to keep an eye on once camp opens up later this week.
Wrapping up with our man James Moran of Tiger Rag Magazine. Hey, got to get your take on LSU hiring a hitting coach with baseball. I don't think you and I have spoken on the program since then. Was this a good move? Was this a predictable move in your eyes?
Well, to me, I've always been the guy that says that kind of the hitting coach is a bit of an overrated job, right? That you can't really get a difference maker at that volunteer spot. Well, what I'm kind of surprised about here is that they could get a guy with Eddie Smith's resume, a guy that's a proven difference maker as a hitting coach on that volunteer assistant position. Obviously, you know, not to go deep in the weeds here, but the volunteer assistant does get paid in a place like LSU. Obviously, there's other smaller schools where those guys don't get paid. But I still didn't think you could get a guy with a 10-year resume to take that job. Normally, it's a job for, you know, guys just trying to break into the business, or, you know, guys in their early to mid-20s that kind of want coaching or want to be a coach, but, you know, haven't quite built that resume yet and want to learn under an established guy. And Eddie Smith, LSU's getting a guy that's coached some big programs around the country. I mean, he was at Virginia with Brian O'Connor. He was at Notre Dame. He ran his own JUCO program. He popped back up at Tulane and was, you know, I'm not going to give him all the credit, but he was the hitting coach on some really successful offense, especially last year where they, you know, set like 10 AAC records for home runs and on base percent. I think he's a guy that's going to bring maybe a bit more of the analytical side and, you know, preach things like launch angle. And, you know, if you remember at the end of the year, Palmieri said the offense needs to either strike out a lot less or hit a lot more home runs. I think this move kind of signals that their plan is to try to hit a lot more home runs.
LSU baseball. Dingers coming to an Alec box near you. James, you know, I appreciate the time. Enjoy camp next week. If there's a big cat, you better be the first out there to film it.
I'll try, man. You know, that's always a real competitive race to get out there if there's any big cat sightings.
The smartest Moran in the village. James, we appreciate it.
No problem, Ben. Talk to you later, buddy.
I'll tell you this. When it comes to competition, everybody's got it a little easier in that race to film the big cat. I know they don't do it every practice now, or even all that often. But when Miles was there, if you thought you were beating Jim Kleinpeter to film the big cat, you had another thing coming. Just telling you. Don't wear your Birkenstocks. Be ready to go. We're going to head into our final break of the hour. When we return, big things happened earlier today at Turlings Catholic High School. It will have an effect on the select schools and the LHSAA. I'll do my best to decipher and describe on the other side. You're listening to Bumper Sports. Ben and Clint taking you home on a Monday. And we'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
There it is. Clint's turned me on. Now I can talk to Acadiana. Just about 10 minutes to 5 o'clock. It is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're back in on 103.7 The Game. I'll attempt something now that is a wee bit dangerous in the world of live radio. I'll do my best to explain to you things that, well, I wasn't there for, things that I am reading about, things that can occasionally be a little dense as far as material is concerned, and, you know, if I'm wrong, it'll make me look a little bit dense. What I do know is this. Earlier today, beginning this morning, at Turlings Catholic High School, Principal Mike Boyer hosted a number, in fact, all of these select schools from around the state, and first and foremost, 66-1, I'm reading, the votes were. The select schools ratified a constitution and formed an organization to act on their behalf. It will be known as the LSA, the Louisiana Select Association. And according to Robin Fambro of The Advocate, one of the best to ever do it, and an LHS 2A Hall of Famer, there was a lot of applause that broke out as that vote occurred. Now, Robin's listing it as 66 out of 71 schools present voted to approve the LSA Constitution. I saw elsewhere 66 to 1, so I'm going to assume that 4 abstained. If I'm wrong, again, somebody will call me and tell me. 706-0111. It is thought that this would force the hand of the LHSAA and that, well, this might get a wee bit ugly. But now this newly formed LSA, one that has a name, has ratified a constitution, they're an organization that can act on their own behalf. That means they can now choose where they want to play state football, basketball, baseball, and softball championship games. I don't know that a lot was really accomplished on that front today. And what I will say is simply this. I'm going to give a public thank you to Mike Boyer. He invited me to this event. I was in Baton Rouge all day, something I couldn't get out of. So there, I've laid that to bear out on the table. But there are some pretty interesting quotes given by J.P. Kelly. J.P. Kelly is he is an administrator at Catholic High School, and for the entirety of my time at Catholic High School in Baton Rouge, he was the offensive line coach, and he is now the CEO of this newly formed LSA. And so I'll leave it there for now, but I think there will be plenty, and I do mean plenty, moving forward on this subject. Where will state football championship games be played is going to be next up. That's what people will care the most about. Louis Cook told me when he came on the program a few weeks back in the STM press box, we were there for the Quick Slant 7-on-7, and he said quite simply, Hammond and Southeastern have leapt to the forefront as a group that's trying to win a bit to host all of the above, basically, especially football, boys and girls basketball. Doesn't mean that they'll get it, just means that they were one of the first to the mat. We continued and furthered the conversation Thursday of last week when Ken Trahan, CrescentCitySports.com, joined us, and Ken made it pretty clear that further division between the LHSAA and a group that we can now call the LSA would almost certainly force the All-State Sugar Bowl's hand to discontinue, you know, that thing being called the All-State Sugar Bowl Championships, and a huge sponsorship in the process would be lost. And so today would seem to be a pretty big step in the direction of a further split between two sides not coming back together at this point. But maybe you have to knock down the wall of the current LHSAA to rebuild this thing in a model that would ultimately unify everybody. That's my big picture sense of what's continuing today and what is happening. But one thing I can tell you through my conversations, and it's something I absolutely love, when there's an interview that hits people in the right spot on this show, whether they agreed or disagreed with the contents, sometimes there are interviews that hit people. Ken Trahan hit people last week, and I was hit up by folks I hadn't heard from in a hot minute, why don't I put it that way. It was made pretty clear to me that the Superdome is still an option for the select schools if they want to have their football championship schools there. It is still an option. And I guess, hey, look, if you can afford something, then it's always an option. And that was the point that was stressed to me. If the select schools would still like to pay to have their 4 championships contested in the Louisiana Superdome, that's still something that's available to them. So, again, is it going to be at a place like Strawberry Field in Hammond? Is it going to be at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome? Or could it really be, as it was suggested back in February, when Boyer's proposals were originally ratified, could it be highest seed chooses? And as long as they pick a place that is sanctioned by the LHSAA, then put it on a tee, let's roll, game on. So I think there's still a lot to be determined on that front. Again, I will promise you this, in the hours and days that come, I'll do my due diligence to learn more, to speak to some of these same people that were so enthralled by the Ken Trahan interview, and I'll see if I can't get the skinny for you. But this is a big deal. I know we're getting ready for LSU, UL fall camp. I know the Saints are already rolling with their training camp, and you will hear from Sean Payton and a couple of Saints players at the top of our 5 o'clock hour. But I know, damn Skippy, that everybody listening here has skin in the game when it comes to high school athletics. You know I love it. We're all getting ready for what should be an incredibly exciting high school football season. But there's also intrigue, because where will it end this season on the select side? And the honest-to-goodness answer is, right now, we don't know. We do know this. There is a separate organization, and for a long time it was wondered, would there be that federation? I remember talking about this years ago on this program. A new step today certainly was taken, and a big one: the Louisiana Select Association, an organization that will act on their own behalf. They've ratified a constitution, and I think this thing's about to get a little weirder before maybe some normalcy. I don't know that we're talking about a year. We may be talking about 2 to 5 if I had to put down some shekels. So I wanted to make sure to keep you abreast of at least what's out there so far. And I do think I'll try to get some people on the show tomorrow that might be able to speak toward that end with a little more education than yours truly. Why not? Got to stand on the shoulder of giants when you can. All right, CD, let's wind down hour number one and do it with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Toss-up with Cam Meredith gone pecan after playing 5 games in the black and gold for the Saints. Got me to thinking earlier today. Less productive Saints tenure. Is it Cam Meredith coming from the Bears of the NFC North, or Adrian Peterson coming from the Vikings of the NFC North? Don't know. All I do know is this: neither needed to let the door hit them on the way out. Toss up, though, which one was less productive? That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. They are your final stop to fill up your stomach and tank when you head home on Maurice Avenue. 1 hour down, we got 2 more to go. Ruffin Rodrigue, Ross Dellinger stopping by in our 5 o'clock hour. So stay with us. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. That would make this Bumper to Bumper Sports back in and live on 103.7 The Game. Big guest today. In fact, it's a 2-exclamation point type of day. What do I mean? I love guest confirmation. Texted our guy Ruffin Rodrigue, coming at you at 5:15. Bring it with 2 exclamation points, the response. And so Ruffin will do exactly that in about 12 minutes. At the bottom of the hour, 5:45, we go to the nation's capital. Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated, SI.com. A little more of a national look at this college football season. In between, circa 5:30, we'll throw shade. Thank you, Trevor Bauer. But right about now, we promised it. It's time to deliver. Clint and I want you to hear the latest from New Orleans Saints training camp. And after yesterday's installment of training camp went down, defensive coordinator Dennis Allen stepped to the mic. Haven't heard from him yet so far in this early portion of training camp. So let's get after it. He's been asked about a guy who generated buzz in the summer, and he's doing the same thing as we start to fast forward toward the fall. Here's Dennis Allen on rookie DB Chauncey Gardner-Johnson out of Florida.
You know, I think one of the things is he's a versatile athlete, you know, so there's a lot of things that he can do and do well. The key is really going to be, how well does he get acclimated to the things that we're asking him to do? How much can he absorb mentally? You know, and that'll probably dictate you know, the volume and the amount that we can get him involved in the defense. So I think it's probably, you know, probably a little early to speculate as to how much or exactly what role that is. But yet, I do think that that's a talented athlete that we can utilize.
I don't think there's any question. Again, how much right away, to Dennis Allen's point, time will tell. But it's a lot like what James Moran of Tiger Egg Magazine said in our first hour. Chess pieces. Dave Aranda's got them all over the place for LSU's defense. And when James said it, he was referring to guys like Jacoby Stevens, some of these tweener options that can play all over the place and have versatile skill sets. I think that's exactly what the youngster out of Florida can bring to this Saints defense. Let's get at least one more from defensive coordinator Dennis Allen. Last year, the even more ballyhooed rookie was Marcus Davenport coming out of UTSA. And now that the Saints are counting on him even more, right, with Alex Okafor out, what exactly does Dennis Allen expect and think he can get from Marcus Davenport heading into year two?
Well, look, I think I can see a little bit mentally where he's at. He's a little bit more confident in himself. I think that comes with familiarity with the defense and the things that we're going to ask him to do. You know, he fought through the injury last year, which I think limited him some. I think the big thing for him is, you know, I don't think we need to put any outside expectations on him. You know, I think he needs to focus on, you know, his day-to-day improvement, continuing to get better because he's plenty talented enough to be a good player in this league. And I think don't worry about what the end result's going to be. Just worry about the day-to-day improvement, and that'll take care of itself, really.
We've got more sound from Saints training camp. We'll stick on the defensive side of the ball. As I intro it, take a brief ride with me. Last year, look, there's no doubt about it. Demario Davis was the newcomer of the season, one of the best newcomers of the, maybe not the millennium, then it's Drew Brees, for the New Orleans Saints. You get my point. Davis coming over from the Jets was a massive get. That guy this year for Who Dat Nation, if everything goes to plan, you hope it's Jared Cook, right? Pass-catching tight end. But I'm going to tell you that Malcolm Brown might just be that level of impact player that Demario Davis was last year. So let's hear from the former New England Patriot. The first thing he's noticed, there is a lot of good leadership on this team.
I could bring some, but there's already a lot of good leadership and already established in the locker room. You know, I'm just trying to get here and learn the plays, you know, do my part in the whole process. I'll get ready to play the whole season.
Hey, the man played for a world champ last year. In fact, in this clip, he compares and shares some similarities between the Saints and those Patriots.
Definitely. I mean, work hard. We get out here grinding every day. Everybody's doing their job. I mean, it's going unsaid, but everybody knows what they're supposed to be and they're being there. And everybody's out here working, grinding every day.
I feel like we're moments away, CD, from me getting a certain text. We are playing sound bites here from a hook'em horn, are we not, brother?
Yeah, I believe so. So definitely we'll be getting a text from one Danny Jones sooner rather than later.
Yeah, my man must be asleep at the wheel. Let's give him one more chance. Another soundbite from a former horn and now a key cog on the Saints defensive line. Malcolm Brown saying, hey, it's even when you win ships, apparently, it's good to have a fresh start.
Since I've been here, I feel good. And, you know, the camaraderie I'm building with the guys is good so far. And, you know, every day is just a building block. And we're just going to continue to build. And they're only on day three. First day of pass, so we got a long way ahead of us, and you know, we got a long path.
Let's go to head coach Sean Payton next, and we're giving you the latest from Saints training camp on 103.7 The Game. As the team has moved into full gear, full pads, Payton knows, yeah, things change a lot at that point.
Yeah, it's different. You know, you're able to do more things that really are specific to the game. So, clearly, it's different. It was a little bit warmer. Thought we managed the heat okay. But, yeah, I think the level of the type of practice you have changes once you're in full gear.
Let's get a few more from Payton, both obviously involving players on the offensive side of the football. We'll begin with Emmanuel Butler, and he might just be part of the reason that the Saints were comfortable in letting go of Cam Meredith today. Butler, according to Payton, he's been impressive and intriguing.
There's someone that, you know, he's kind of been intriguing. So he's made a play, a couple plays each day. He's big, and I'm excited.
Yeah, okay, short but sweet. Here's a transitional soundbite, because we're about to get to Taysom Hill himself. Here's what Sean Payton, his head coach, had to say about a young man who continues to blossom in so many roles.
Well, his grasp of the offense, his ability to take the play into the huddle, out to the line of scrimmage, you know, get us in the right play. I thought he threw the ball, you know, pretty well the last couple of days. So, and then the things that are harder to see are the things that can happen in a game when a play breaks down and you know, he can advance it. But he's doing well.
We live in a world where Danny Etling is playing receiver and Taysom Hill is a quarterback. With that in mind, let's barrel into some sound from Taysom Hill. He gives you here his progression as a quarterback, now entering his third season at a BYU.
Yeah, I feel a lot more confident, you know, playing inside the offense right now than I did last year, and then obviously rookie year coming here. I think the progression as a quarterback, you get more time on task inside the offense, and you get more confidence, you know, getting up to the line of scrimmage, things start to slow down a little bit, and I think that's the great challenge of this game for a quarterback, is getting to the point where you can play fast enough and take the mental part out of the game.
That's amazing. The fans in attendance there in Metairie with Drew chants that are drowning out Taysom Hill. Just can't get out of that guy's shadow. One more, and then we'll hit our first break of the hour. Taysom Hill asked if he is comfortable with the Saints playbook.
Look, it's hard. I mean, you asked that question. I will say I don't feel like I'm where Drew and Coach Payton is. But I will say, comparing it obviously to where I was 2 years ago, to where I was last year, I feel a lot more confident in the game plan. But by no means do I feel like, you know, I'm where Drew is, and it's a constant learning experience for everybody. And that's just, you know, the progression as a quarterback, but I'm still definitely still learning.
It's about all you can ask for. And I'll say this as we head toward that opening break of the hour. As a quarterback, you have to know what everyone else around you is up to. That should doubly help Taysom Hill because, you know, sometimes he's not the quarterback. Sometimes he's the whatever you want to call it, the tight end, the H-back. Guy can line up all over the place. So learning the playbook for him sometimes can take on a little different definition. You are listening to a Monday edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, brought to you in part by Relief Windows. Make sure when you think windows, doors, and siding in Acadiana, you think Relief Windows. Visit the website reliefwindows.com. We're coming right back in. Ruff and Rodri. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and you're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Call it a kick in the head if you want. It's just great sports talk radio every time this guy comes aboard. Yeah, Bumper to Bumper Sports back with you on 103.7 The Game. Our guest is Ruffin Rodrigue, owner of Ruffino's on the River. Ruffin, can you feel the football in the air yet?
I can feel the love on the rocks, but it would be love on the Ponderosa. I think the energy of Coach O and Coach Napier and Coach Payton, I think we got a pretty good time to look forward to in South Louisiana for football this fall. And it's normally it's real boring right now, but I think they're making it a lot of fun. They're opening up, they're giving a lot more information than we used to be out of the past, with the likes of Coach Miles and Hutzbeth and even if you go back to some of the Saints coaches that had closed practices. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
I want you to compare when you were coming through the program and where things are this time of the year, modern times, in 2019. And think of this. You and I spoke with Tommy Moffitt last Tuesday, And he flat out said, look, the guys have 9 days off. We want to give them a breather. Billy Napier told me recently, our guys, with the way summer classes work, they barely get a week off before you go right into August. So how much has that changed, and how much are they maybe considering some of the players' mental health, safety, all those things?
Yeah, you got to – it's, you know, school, academics, and athletics, one day they'll get it together. We did a little bit of summer school. I mean, I think I took accounting in summer school just because it was so hard and I wanted to get through it. Now that I'm in business, I wish I'd have taken a lot more. But it's a thing with your legs, which in the past, again, I was up in the past, but we overworked a lot of the kids, and they got into camp, and by the time they got into camp, they were legs were 75%, and all of a sudden they were trying to rebuild them. And I think Coach O is listening to Jack Marucci, listening to Tommy Moffitt, and taking those days off and making sure they're resting, getting a lot of cold cryotherapy or cold baths or hot and cold and all the different things you can do to strengthen and rest the muscles and get sleep. You know, that's the biggest thing I told you about was not having the college dorms, the athletic dorms, which we had. They curfew us. They know they can get us to sleep. And, you know, some of these guys, they can live with girlfriends or sisters or whatever, and you know, you don't know what you're getting yourself into. So they couldn't, you know, sleep is a huge deal. That's why I love the pods. You can get them a nap during the day, and hopefully they can catch up on the rest.
I remember LSU leading off its season against Oregon, Ruffin, in 2011, and how that changed the way Miles' team had to prepare all summer and especially during August. Take that same, I guess, line of thinking and apply it to the Cajuns this year, right? They lead off with Mississippi State. Does that change the way they go through camp at all?
A little bit, because you've got a, you know, highly, highly talented team to start the season off with. So, yeah, you're not walking into a game where you can, you know, you're playing on playing a lot of people. This game, you're going to play your best people. And you got to be ready for dynamic offense and some big guys that can run around on defense. So, yeah, it's a totally different scheme and how you get yourself ready and all that. But for the Cajuns to be in contention in a game like this, which I think I saw what Bruce Marshall had at 23.5 was the point spread, which I thought was a little high. So many of my friends out there, gambling buddies, I would definitely throw it on the Cajuns for that game, being in New Orleans. I like teams that have more depth. Obviously, that's where the big line came from. but you don't put a dollar amount in the point spread on toughness, passion, a will to win, and a new coach and energize. And that's what Billy's brought to this team. Less depth, but guys that really want to get after it and make a statement. And it's hard to put a price tag on that. That's what I like about it.
Ruffin Rodriguez, our guest on 103.7 The Game. We're bouncing here, there, and everywhere with Ruff right now. How about the news of the day coming out of LSU, Ruffin? Joe Oliva put in place a fund transfer policy where they were mandated to give at least a certain amount. I think $36 million over 5 years was laid out. $50 million was what was delivered, and that's athletics back to the university. Discontinued today by Scott Woodward. Your reaction?
We all expected it. Not other SEC schools really don't do it. And Scott's just following trend of, hey, look, we have one of the best budgets. We're getting all this money, and we're giving most of it away, and it puts us down near the bottom. So why not keep it, build our athletics, and then, look, this is the way Nick Saban did it. And that's what I hope LSU understands. LSU is not a top-tier academic school. Alabama wasn't a top-tier academic school, but they are now, and you know why? Because of Nick Saban. Nick Saban never gave a dollar to the athletics at Alabama. But what he did do, he built a program that was number one in the country to where every kid around the country wanted to come to Alabama because of the football program. and they got all these valedictorians and from all over Texas, and they got one of the best student bodies in the nation. And it's one of the most sought-after schools now. And all the SEC teams followed suit, Georgia, all of them. LSU's just kind of behind the eight ball academically on that. And they want their hands out. But it's not going to happen. Scott Woodward will bring this program into another twilight zone. It'll be one of the tops in the country. It'll be financially stable as anybody. He's as smart as anybody in college football. He loves LSU. He's going to make it happen. So anybody, any critics on Scott Woodward, you need to just put your pen down or your typewriter down the keyboard and stop typing, because he will win.
I love the emphatic nature there. And let me back that up with something, because this is kind of ironic. I was in Baton Rouge for most of today, Ruffin. I ran into somebody whose son graduated from my alma mater, Catholic of Baton Rouge, just this past May. He told me, Ruffin, that five or six kids from one private school in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, were going to the University of Alabama as freshmen this year. That blew my mind.
Yeah, that's a great program Alabama set up. If you if you had the right score and you're a valedictorian, you're automatically in. No ifs, ands, or buts. They'll take you. And they want people from out of state. Alabama, I think it's, I forgot what it is now. It's like 20% of the school is like from the state of Alabama. Everybody else is from all over the country. And that's what Nick Saban has done. He brought national prominence to a school. And, you know, he didn't have to give back to the school, because the school's making hand over fist what the students are getting. So that's where that came from. And there's no TOPS program and all that. I know they have their teachers fund for the buildings, but, you know, with LSU and having TOPS and a qualifying deal, which is good for underprivileged kids, still hurts the school's budget. So they have to go asking Joe Oliva, and he would give it to them. Well, that's not going to happen anymore. And make it yourselves. We're going to win. You get the kids to come in and pay the right amount. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, definitely a new sheriff in town. Ruffin, before we run out of time today, I know that you were busy in Grand Isle. Our good friend Yvette Gerard was at Rufino's on the River Friday. Brother, she was awesome. She sat there and brought it for like 45 minutes. She talked about her time on the same athletic staff, if you will, as Nick Saban, talked about fishing all over this state. It was a lot of fun.
Man, she's great. She is truly a Louisiana legend, and a Louisiana legend in all facets, from all the way around the South, North. She is as respected and loved as anybody I've ever seen. And her posse, I called it, they're some of the funnest group of fans and couples that just love to support programs. She knew how to do it and inspire a base. And she was basically the Nick Saban of softball. I mean, excuse me, the Skip Berman of softball coming to LSU. She did everything right, everything right. And, you know, built the booster program, worked tirelessly, and handed it off to Beth to have a great career.
I'm also proud to tell you that she was towing a fishing boat behind her in the Rufino's on the River parking lot. So it doesn't get any more South Louisiana than that.
She didn't get upset with me for not having a dock out front, huh?
No.
I'm sure she wants one.
Not this time, but she'll get it next time, I'm sure.
I'm working with River Ranch to try to get a dock out there, but it's just tough. Things are expensive.
You got enough going on out there. People need to go celebrate life anytime they can at Rufino's on the River. I look forward to getting back out there soon, Ruffin. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, I'll be in I'm bringing my 11-year-old to the Hall of Fame this Friday, so I won't be in on the River, but maybe we can make a call from the Hall of Fame for you.
We'll get it done, man. You guys enjoy that trip.
Okay, buddy. Thank you.
That's Ruffin Rodrigue, owner of Rufino's on the River. Let's get the doc out there. Let's get this thing done at 921 Camellia. We'll start the petition. We'll do a GoFundMe. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. But we'll see. If Ruffin's into it, we will. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we will be right back. That much I promise you. Time to throw some shade on 103.7 The Game.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, If you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
That soundbite never, ever gets old. And, well, neither does the text that I just got. I'll share it with you. We'll throw some shade. Doing B2BS things. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. I just told you, right before we came back in, that we got a couple of guest hosts that are filling my shoes on Thursday. They're going to be doing it live from the Taproom River Ranch. So you know they're going to have fun, but it'll be Blaine Viator, Christopher Kovach, and immediately, Clint, I got the text, how Karen Crow can one show get? And you're producing the damn thing.
Exactly. It's going to be about as Karen Crow can be, my man.
And somewhere out there, Tony Corville is just like, what the hell, bro? I don't get an invite? Hey, but you know what? Where did I invite TC to? Do you recall?
Billy's Boudin.
Yeah, man. We opened that bad boy up. The Billy's Boudin and Cracklin's in?
Upper Lafayette.
Yeah.
We're just going to go with that, okay?
The one that's like a baseball throw away from quote-unquote Karen Crow. I know where the physical address is. I know where the mail gets sent. Damn it, it's Karen Crow. And don't make me argue that fact anymore. But I'm sure the guys will have fun Thursday taking my place. We just had fun speaking with Ruffin Rodrigue. The pleasure will be ours as well in 10 minutes when Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated, SI.com, joins the program. But right about now, it is time, to issue a daily reminder. It's a PSA for everyone throughout Acadiana, that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to their website, patiocenter.com. I promise you will fall in love with the inventory. It could be the standing seam metal awnings, the retractable shades and screens, maybe the best fit for you, the customized patio covers always with the cypress accents. And the cherry on top, you could trust their professional installers inside your home. You can also trust them to get the job done before the Saints go marching into the Super Bowl, even New Year's Eve. But you better hurry and go to their website, patiocenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
Used to be, back in the day, we only threw shade at Trevor Bauer when he was knocking Garrett Cole's spin rate. Garrett Cole, yeah, he goes from the Pirates to the Astros, the NL to the AL, and he's one of the foremost strikeout artists that Major League Baseball has today. And an all-star, whether, you know, Ben Love likes it or not. A little third person drop there. CD, we've got new reason today to involve Cleveland Indians pitcher, at least for now, Trevor Bauer in throwing shade. Tell him about it.
You're correct. Probably his last start for the Cleveland Indians was yesterday, giving up 5 runs in the 5th inning, and he made things a whole lot worse when Terry Francona went to the mound to remove him from the game. Instead of handing the ball over to Francona, Bauer launched this thing straight up through it to center field, 375 feet, and it went over the wall in front of the batter's eye behind rookie Oscar Mercado. And that's just like bad enough, and then you just could see audibly Terry Franco just looking at him like, dude, just ride the pine, you're done.
I've never seen or heard of anything quite like that.
It's amazing. Mind you, he has apologized for it, but it's the point still stands, dude.
There are certain things that you can apologize for in the aftermath and almost pass it off as, I didn't know exactly what I was doing, or I didn't mean to do that. Nah, dude, you meant to throw a home run from the pitcher's mound. Like, you can't walk that back. You just can't.
Especially like whenever you're having to kind of deal with it from his perspective as a pitcher, you're typically supposed to give the ball to the skipper and then you go to the bench. No, he straight up threw that damn thing. I understand he's frustrated, but, dude, that was just straight up childish from Tyler Bauer. Trevor Bauer.
Oh, yeah, I see what you did there. I would be absolutely incensed if I were his agent as well. Because, what, the trade deadline now is less than 45 hours away?
Yep.
And presumably he's looking to get himself moved, but, I mean, this can't up your value in any way, shape, or form. There's no way.
It's going to be awful.
So if I'm this guy's agent, I'm just don't open your mouth and only throw the baseball forward. Don't throw it backwards. Baseball's not a game where you throw it in reverse. Unless you're like Derek Jeter, and you're getting Oakland A's players out who don't slide when they should, and enhancing your legend. That's a whole other thing. But still, Trevor Bauer, you're going to have to wear this one today, brother, because you earned it.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Going to hit a very quick recess, because when we return, we start our way. It's really two-thirds of the way to the Tommy Mansky Triple Crown. It's back-to-back guests. We've got Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated, SI.com, on the other side of this break, and Nico Yanko, Deputy Athletics Director for the UL Raging Cajuns, at straight up 6 o'clock. So stick with us. We got plenty of goods coming at you. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports, live and taking you home faithfully every day on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
A quarter to 6 o'clock, back in with more of the good stuff. You're listening to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. I'm pretty sure our next guest is in the nation's capital. We'll figure out if I'm right or I'm wrong. Aboard the ARDCO Equipment Hotline, Ross Dellinger, college football guru for Sports Illustrated, SI.com. Ross, welcome back on. Am I right? Are you in D.C.?
I am. I returned home Saturday from a trip to L.A., the Pac-12 Media Day, and made some visits out there. And before that was in Birmingham for SEC Media Days, and then went to Atlanta for some stuff, and then went up to Clemson. So I'm back home for at least a week or so. So happy to be kind of not on a plane or in an Uber or something. It's been nice to get back home.
Yeah, sleep in your own bed while you can. Ross, I'll ask you this. I've been to SEC Media Days a handful of times, Sun Belt Media Day each of the last 4 years. But what's it like going to another of the Power Fives? You were out in La La Land. How does it compare to SEC Media Days?
You know, a lot of people there, I'm friends with and a lot of other reporters, and they saw me at Pac-12 Media Day and kind of had this look on their face like, oh, man, you know, I can't believe you're here. And then usually they said something like, you must be so overwhelmed just knowing my history at SECs, which is, of course, a huge event with 1,500 media people there over 4 days. The Pac-12 is one day in about, just completely guessing, about 400, maybe media people, 300 to 400.
Okay.
And I was not underwhelmed, and I'll tell you why. Even though they cram it all into one day, everybody's so accessible. I mean, they have a lunch in the middle of the day where pretty much every coach and the players are sitting there eating, and you walk right up to them and you can have a conversation. And that's just not that's not how SEC Media Days work. So it was actually refreshing, and it was a good day where you pick up a lot of content and things for future stories. So it was good, man. Of course, we were in Hollywood, so that was cool too. The weather was unbelievable. Half of the media day is held outside, which is so cool because it was, 85, 88 degrees, but with no humidity. I mean, it felt like, it felt like 78, 80 degrees. So a lot of it was outside. It was really cool. It was a good time.
Ross Dellinger, our guest, Sports Illustrated, SI.com. You were the, I think he told me that the commissioner of the SEC refers to you as, what, the beer guy? Is that right? Something like that for years?
Every time I saw Greg, he would say, you got a beer question for me or something like that. In fact, we met at SEC Media Days, me and him, for a little one-on-one chat. And I told him, I don't have to ask you about beer anymore. I don't have anything to say. Y'all passed everything. So instead I asked him about gambling.
There you go. Well, let me ask you this, beer man. You don't have to go to Sankey about whether or not it's allowed anymore, but what do you make out of the integration? in its infancy, especially at Tiger Stadium, where apparently now they're farming it out and asking expectations of where the pricing of alcohol will be.
Yeah, I saw that. That's smart for them to kind of do that survey. I figured they would do something like that. And they've done that stuff before with stuff in the stadium, with new food, new concession stuff. So that's interesting. But yeah, I expected them to do that. When you're providing stuff to fans, you want to make sure, you know, you want to know what they want, or at least an idea of what most of them want. You know, so why not send a little survey to your season ticket holders and get an idea, you know, of what they want to pay. What kind of stuff they want to drink. That was interesting. And, I think it's only LSU and A&M, I believe, are only the two schools who have actually come out publicly, I believe, and said they'll have alcohol. So, I'd expect maybe one or two more, but it's going to be a slow process of everybody kind of doing the trial balloon, which LSU and people like A&M have done previously. They've already did the trial balloon with the whole, little premium areas, premium seat areas that they've kind of created. So, I think it's we're going to see it slowly kind of get to where, probably most of the league will have it. It's just going to take some time.
Let's talk some LSU football on the field. Ross, for many people, myself included, you were kind of the foremost authority on the transition, all the news that was breaking in the Miles to Ogeron transition. And so when you look at it now, what are some of the things that Ed has done and continues to do that maybe define his era of LSU football? I'm not saying they're all better than Miles, but what do you notice that's different in defining the way he does it?
Well, first of all, from a recruiting standpoint, unless was big, obviously, in recruiting. And I remember Les and I having conversations when he was at LSU about Nick Saban and Alabama and how serious they are in Tuscaloosa about recruiting. And he wanted to be equally as serious. So I think Les was serious about recruiting. But I think that Ed just takes it to probably even another level when it comes to recruiting. And he's been able to leverage some things that Les couldn't with his bosses, like recruiting staff members and analysts, of course, even though those aren't part of recruiting. But he's been able to get more analysts. He's got twice as many analysts as Les had. I think he's got 10 to 12 or so. Les had 5, I think, in last year. And then the recruiting staff, I think, has grown as well. So that's recruiting. The biggest, though, difference, obviously, is the offense. Les just was so hesitant to make the leap into the spread, and he always wanted that fullback. He always wanted those tight ends. And we've seen, Ed not make a quick leap, but it's been evolving, and we never – saw that necessarily from Les. And maybe it's because of the quarterbacks he had during that time late in his career. I certainly understand that. But obviously something needed to change, and he didn't change it. And he ran toss dive on the first play of 2016 when he said all offseason that he was changing, and he ran toss dive. And so it was just like a middle finger up to Joe Oliva, So they're, those are probably, the offense is the biggest one. And when I say about leveraging things for new staff members, the growing budget, where he's got more analysts and recruiting, he's got a better relationship or had a better relationship with his boss, Joe Oliva. Les and Joe certainly didn't have a good relationship. Obviously, everybody knows that. And Ed and Joe did. That's why the new, the hiring of Scott Woodward, it's going to be interesting to see how that works. Although Ed and Scott, from Louisiana, they're the Louisiana guy. I think they have a lot in common, a lot of mutual friends. So we'll see how that goes.
We'll try to fit in one or two more for Ross Dellinger on 103.7 The Game. You mentioned, Ross, you spent time at Clemson. I've had some people on this show suggest that maybe Ed is following in the footsteps of Dabo, right? The interim that wasn't always loved, got the job and is running with it. You spent time with Dabo around that program. Do you see any of that?
Well, I mean, outside of the interim deal, I'm not. I don't know how much I see the similarities between the two men. You know, I mean, Dabo was an offensive guy, and they went full throttle for Ed. We haven't seen Ed, and I don't know if we'll ever see Ed and then do that. You know, the recruiting is maybe a little similar in how they recruit and how aggressive that they are and how much they love it. I think Dabo does like it and is very aggressive with it and stuff. Spends a lot of time with it. Outside of those things, I don't know if I see exact correlation, but certainly when you look at interim coaches who get jobs, those two in the last, decade or so, they've been some of the most successful we've seen. You know, I mean, Ed's won 19 games, and Dabo's done, well, we all know kind of what Dabo's done. So, I mean, Dabo set the standard for interim coaches, and I think Ed is on his way, you know, to maybe reaching, or I don't know if anybody's ever going to be able to reach the mark that Dabo has set as interim coach. But Ed is certainly on his way there and has proven that, just like Dabo kind of set the mark there, you know, it can work.
Both Ed and Dabo, Ross, clearly have been chasing Nick Saban, one with a little more success than the other. So I'll ask you this on the way out here. How long do you think that man continues to coach in Tuscaloosa? I get asked that probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 times a week. You might get it even more. What's your sense of that?
Yeah, that's like the question everybody wants to answer. I don't even know if Nick has an answer, you know. And if he did, he's too savvy of a recruiter and this person, too smart of a person to admit, you know, to reveal when that would be, because obviously recruiting would be significantly impacted. So I don't even know if he knows, though, inside, you know. I mean, the guy just keeps going. He's got the new hit now and everything. I have no idea. But, you know, I don't know if he's one of those people that wants to, you know, quote-unquote, die-on-the-field type coach, or he wants to, you know, have a retirement. He seems to me that he's the guy who would just kind of go and go until he can't go anymore, pretty much, and not have really much of retirement. He seems so driven. I mean, the guy was what he opened his SEC Media Day talk with, like, thank gosh football's back. I've been bored. I'm tired of relaxing, I think is one of his quotes. So he's not much into retirement. I don't think he's that kind of guy. So, I mean, this can go on another decade.
LSU fans just got a little upset with that. But, Ross, you tell it like it is all the time. Hey, thanks for doing this. Look forward to catching up again during football season.
All right, Ben. See you.
Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated, SI.com, and a man at home, at peace, being back in D.C. Still weird thinking of Delhi not living in South Louisiana, but we're all adjusting. All right, 2 hours down, one more to go. Nico Yanko, Deputy Athletics Director for the UL Ragin' Cajuns, leads off hour number 3, and then a Q&A replay, the best of my interview with Yvette Girard. We did it Friday. We run it back today at 6:30. Stick with us. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper...
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Rolling into our third and final hour. Welcome back in. I'm Ben Love, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. Joined, as always, by the famous Clint D. And both of us today, no road trip inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Excited to fire off of the line in hour 3 with a great guest. Let's go find him. Aboard the ARDCO Equipment Hotline, He is the Deputy Athletics Director for your UL Ragin' Cajuns. Nico Yanko is with us. Nico, how are you today?
Ben, what's going on? Things are great over here on campus. Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure, and the way I look at it, you've got Billy Napier returning for year two. The football team coming off a division championship. Beer is as low as $2 inside Cajun Field. You guys seem pretty ready for this thing.
We're excited. You know, Coach Napier, our campus, community, everybody's pretty revved up right now. But we got a wonderful team coming back, some great student-athletes, stacked back backfield with three running backs that can get it done. Definitely some identified talent at the quarterback position. Your weapons are as potent as they've ever been. Defense that's going to get stronger and stronger every week, just like they did last year. And then you hit it on the head, the fan-friendly concession prices. Things are rolling right there. I think that's created a lot of buzz, not only here regionally, you know, in Louisiana, but also nationally. You know, that story got picked up in the Washington Post. We've really created some excitement around that, which is pretty innovative, and we got to compliment you know, our team here. That was a fun one for me to work with, our concessions vendor, just to make sure we were providing a great experience to our fans on game days. And again, getting those into a little bit more of a reasonable pricing, which is going to be great. But I tell you what, the value of our season ticket right now is you can't compare it to many.
Nico, let's stick with football for a few more beats. And you played the game. What do you remember, and what does this time of year kind of mean to you? When you're getting into August, the players are reporting, it's time for getting better internally, then working on your first opponent. I mean, recall what August is like.
August is the best. You know, you get all the jitters getting ready to go into camp. Everybody's psyched up, and they're getting ready for not only competing with themselves and being the best version of themselves, but getting after it a little bit. And of course, everybody's looking forward to that first game. And this year, we get to prepare for Mississippi State, which is going to be a great opponent to tee up against game one. You know, you get your training staff, your academic crew is getting ready to roll, you know, wrapping up the summer class sessions. So everybody's getting ready for the fall semester. You know, the band's out there practicing, so it's fun to see the pride of Acadiana out there rolling. Our cheer and spirit squads are rolling there. It's pretty fun, very electrifying. You know, your coaches right now are working through their last-minute additions to what they want to do and accomplish through the camp schedule, which, as we know with Coach Napier, is a complete strong regimen that's going to be very strong for us to make sure we're prepared to take on Mississippi State week one and then throughout the year. But it's pretty exciting. You know, putting the quarterback hat on, you know, those guys are making sure they're healthy, they're doing all the right things. You're ready to get in there and, you know, get going with your teammates and making sure you're commanding the huddle and have some fun there. So we're excited to see everything that's going to come out here in the next few weeks. But again, our team gets rolling here on Friday.
Talking Cajuns football, Nico Yanko, our guest on 103.7 The Game. We had Billy Napier earlier in the summer, and he was not shy, Nico, about sharing the fact that his staff had opportunities to leave, had opportunities, depending on how you would look at it, to climb the ladder, maybe even in the NFL. I'm not going to ask you for specifics and names, but from your shoes and with Dr. Brian Maggard as the AD, what was it like watching these guys want to stay in Lafayette and having guys that were coveted elsewhere?
It speaks volumes, Ben, about the confidence in what's going on here at the University of Louisiana and specifically here in the athletic department. But we've assembled such a great staff. That infrastructure is so unique and so powerful that those guys believe so strongly in the mission of this institution, the mission of this athletic department, and they know what they're going to be able to accomplish as a football staff. And, yeah, we had guys getting recruited away to the most elite talents, I guess you would call it, in the football realms of college athletics. But additionally, to the NFL, you know, itself, we had people getting recruited away. And I think for those individuals that turn down those types of opportunities, not only individually and professionally there, but also personally, I mean, those are great situations that benefit those coaches in a lot of different ways and their families. But you talk about that investment into this program, into the young men on that football team, and into this university community, I'm telling you what, that means that something special is cooking over here, and we're really excited to see all that rolling out in year two under Coach Napier.
We'll go big picture, and Nico, I'd be remiss if I didn't give a nod to Kevin Foote with the Acadiana Advocate. Tremendous piece that came out 3 or 4 days ago. And the theme simply, Dr. Brian Maggard shines brightly through turbulent stint with the Raging Cajuns. And we understand all the tragedy that's befallen the athletic department. You work hand in hand with Dr. Maggard. How would you describe what this last couple of years has been like and the way that you all have been able to persevere and continue along the path?
You know, Brian and you know, every bit of the compliment I give to Brian also goes to his better half, we'll call it, his Carrie. Those two have been rock stars in helping us, navigate the rocky waters at times. We've definitely had some highs, but we've definitely had some lows as it regards to just, the unique situations that have happened here. You know, you talk about, deaths in your athletic department, a loss of, Coach Robichaud, who's not a replaceable individual. The ability for Brian to come back time and time again and making strong hires at those coaching positions, really directing our compass as an athletic department and aligning with what Dr. Savoy wants to get done for our campus, but also growing the Raging Cajuns brand here. It's been very, I'll say, awe-inspiring for me, somebody who knows him closely and prior to us coming here, but also being here almost since day one of his arrival. I walk in and that guy motivates me every day. And there's days where, he deserves a lot of attaboys. You know, I would say that the guy has done some tremendous things for our athletic department and this university. And I'm telling you right now, the Raging Cajuns brand has never been stronger. And that's a compliment to Brian and his vision from that athletic director chair, our senior leadership team, our head coaches, and all of our staff members. And again, compliments to Brian, Carrie, Dr. Savoy is a big part of this, and so many people within our campus community help. But Kevin did a wonderful job covering some of those situations over the past two and a half years. Again, some of the ups and downs, but we're really looking forward to, kicking off football. Even before that, you're going to have soccer and volleyball with some great games. Basketball season, those renewals around the corner here. Sam, you'll start seeing our, be on the lookout for our basketball schedules coming out here soon. So we're really looking forward to some really bright days ahead, not only on the field of competition, but, in the community with our student athletes, our athletic department family, and really looking forward to hopefully bringing in some wins and celebrating a little bit more than the past few months has shown. But, again, compliments to Brian and everything that he's been able to do helping the university community weather the storm.
So follow me with this next one. Yvette Gerard, former Cajun softball coach, a Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, was with me Friday, and she said that Dr. Maggard visited with her for a whole day in Baton Rouge when he was going through the process that ultimately led to hiring Jerry Glasgow. She said it was remarkable how honed in that he was and focused, and it looked like on one guy, on Glasgow. Was it like that with Matt Deggs? I mean, was this something that was pretty cut and dry to you all about what you wanted to do to replace Tony Robichaud during that difficult time?
Yeah, again, Dan, you don't replace a coach like Tony. What you do, though, is you find the guy that's going to pick up the torch and carry that and carry it with as much passion as you want in your head football, or head coaches in any sport. And from there, Brian's going to look for somebody who's incredibly competitive, a relentless recruiter, builds positive relationships with our student athletes, and is a proven winner. And, Matt Deggs was definitely that individual, just like Coach Glasgow, just like Coach Napier, just like Lance Key. A lot of similarities in those four that we've made here, some remarkable hires, some incredible individuals to lead these sport programs. So to answer your question, yeah, I mean, Matt is the guy for the program, and we're really looking forward to him. His boots are on ground, and that guy runs a mile, 100 miles an hour. So it's been fun to watch him and his energy hit this athletic department day one. So Brian did a wonderful job with that and rolling out that hire of Coach Deggs.
Always fun to catch up, Nico. Look forward to seeing you before too long here. We'll be out at Cajun Field week two against Liberty, maybe before that in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. We'll get up early for that kickoff.
Come on now. Get everybody out there. We're really excited to see everybody in New Orleans. And then I can stay on the lookout tomorrow and maybe the next few days when this stuff gets out there. But we'll have some flash sales hitting the parishes, similar to what we did last year, so opportunities to make it out to Cajun Field. And just a reminder, we do have those fan-friendly concession items for individuals when you do come out to Cajun Field. So looking forward to having some fun with Cajun Nation this year. And as always, a great day to be a Raging Cajun.
Hey, I'm going to squeeze in a quick PAT. I almost forgot. Billy Napier tomorrow is going to present the Lafayette Strong flag at City Hall. What more can you tell our listeners?
looking for a great opportunity for Coach to get out there and recognize the community, get recognized in the community, but also say thank you to the community that supports us. Other than that, we'll have some good coverage of those things going on there, and obviously appreciate the mayor and the community taking time to allow us to come over and be a part of something so special.
Awesome. Nico, thanks for doing this again. We'll see you soon.
Yes, sir. Bye.
Talking Raging Cajuns for the last 10-plus minutes with Nico Yanko, Deputy Athletics Director for UL, and that event tomorrow, 10 a.m., over at Lafayette City Hall. Quick break. We'll be right back in. We can take your calls at 706-0111. I referenced my chat with Yvette Girard. We're going to run that back in about 17 minutes. Don't go anywhere. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
You're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now back to Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
Interviews everywhere on a Monday, but time for a little commentary and to take your phone calls if you dare. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 1037 The Game. Call us up. Let us know what you think. We just talked Raging Cajuns football, UL Athletics, with Nico Yanko. We've had conversations as well with James Moran, Ruffin Rodrigue, Ross Dellinger. Yeah, we've been busy, but we've got time for you. 706-0111. While we wait, two interesting factoids. We delivered you the news about a week and a half ago, maybe, that Jake Mariznick was suspended two games by Major League Baseball. I know the appeal was out there, CD. There is an update on that storyline, the latest.
Yeah, this came out earlier today. The suspension has been upheld. It'll go into effect tomorrow and Wednesday's game against the Cleveland Indians, so he won't be a part of that action.
Stroh's off tonight. They just finished up against the St. Louis Cardinals in the Midwest, and they'll stay on the road to take on the Cleveland Indians. Will Trevor Bauer be there? Magic 8-Ball says probably not. But we'll find out. Wednesday, I believe 1 p.m. Eastern time, is the trade deadline. At any rate, it ain't far from now. We'll see who the Astros and everybody else add to their roster on the stretch run. And again, I'll remind you, this kind of had to be jogged into my memory. I think it was Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle that reiterated this to me. There's no such thing anymore as like two separate deadlines or tiered deadlines.
Yeah.
You'll remember, Clint, we talked about this. Justin Verlander was nabbed after kind of the original deadline. No more JV rule in Houston. So that certainly is interesting. One other caveat from today in the world of college football that I didn't want to slide past this. Alabama and Wisconsin have scheduled a home-and-home series. 2024, it'll be Camp Randall in Wisconsin. 2025, Tuscaloosa, Bryant-Denny Stadium. Interesting. LSU Wisconsin never could work out that home and home. Had to play that bad boy in Houston and then in Green Bay. But Alabama was able to accomplish that. Very interesting indeed. All right, let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Mike. Sorry, Mike. Hey. Yeah, we got you, Mike. What's up?
Nothing much, man. I wanted to just comment on what you were talking about earlier about the Saints training camp. Whenever LSU plays Florida, they on their defense, they had two players that stuck out like sore thumbs. One was Wright, and the other one was Gardner Johnson. Man, I'm so excited to see him play, man. I think we got a steal. He was all over the field like Tyrann Mathieu when we played him, and I just can't wait to see him on Sunday, man. I'm expecting some really big things out of him.
There we go. Mike is weighing in on Chauncey Gardner Johnson. He continues to be a pretty big topic, and I think that Mike Hurts of sound we played earlier from Dennis Allen, defensive coordinator for the Saints, not yet ready to promise how much playing time, but I think it's obvious he's going to fit in somewhere.
Exactly, and I think that's going to be a big thing. And at first I was uncertain of which way this was going to go when he brought up LSU Florida last year. I'm like, oh yeah, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson was a key cog in that ball game on the defensive side of things.
Florida may now have an offensive-minded head coach in Dan Mullen. but they have been recruiting top-tier defensive players for quite some time, going back to the last couple of regimes, even after life with Urban Meyer in Gainesville. So, yeah, Florida defensively, certainly they've produced the goods. And the Saints are hoping for not one but two former Florida Gators to produce on that side of the football. Can you think of the other one?
I can't think of the other one off the top of my head.
How quickly they forget. Alex Anzalone.
Yeah.
And health has been, I guess, the bugaboo there. Because if Alex Anzalone and his Thor-like hair could just stay healthy, he is so incredibly versatile. I remember when he came in 2 years ago as a rook out of Florida, getting after the passer, dropping back in coverage, run stopping. He's got tools that would very, very well complement Demario Davis. But again, he's got to be able to stay healthy. But I like the call from Mike. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, maybe he could be what the cat from Wisconsin last year never was. And, of course, that's going right over the top of my head, his name. But if you recall, they drafted – yeah, you'll Google it because that's what you do. That's how you correct me every damn show. But go ahead and Google it. They drafted the kid out of Wisconsin – that was kind of a Swiss Army knife DB, and he didn't even make it out of August onto the 53-man roster. And so you'll look that up and tell me. But I remember this time last year, I think a lot of us were kind of trying to talk him into being something, right? Like talk his drafting and his path into fruition. Let me know when you find it. But he was taken in the 2018 draft. There were two players I think we were trying to talk ourselves into. It was the lineman, O-lineman, out of Florida State. That certainly didn't happen. And the DB, Natrell Jamerson.
Yeah.
Once again, proving that I'm faster than bleeping Google, or at least your ability to use Google. Natrell Jamerson.
Exactly.
There you go. I kept thinking Irish whiskey. Boom. All right, Natrell Jamerson. Eventually I got there. So, yeah, he didn't even make it to Labor Day, right? Cat didn't make it to September. There's not any question. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is going to make it to September. The question is how much playing time. The question is who do you leapfrog? My pick there, I'm not sure if Saints fans will like to hear this or not. My pick is Eli Apple. I think with the return of Patrick Robinson, you've got a chance for Robinson and Gardner-Johnson to be chess pieces that Dennis Allen can use at times interchangeably and rarely, but still on occasion, on the field at the same time. And you use them to complement some of your weapons on an island, obviously like a Marshawn Lattimore. So just my two cents, but I do happen to agree with Mike. Really, really, really big opportunity ahead of Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. And Saints now, I believe, 4 days strong with training camp. We're going to do our best as this week progresses to get you some reports from New Orleans. I tried to get our guy Sharif Ishak on Friday. Do you know what he was doing Friday, Clint?
It's a good question. I mean, I know he recently got married, so maybe.
Dude, that's what I thought, too. I tried to get him on the show Friday, and he said he was getting hitched. I was like, so, you know, was that like a Statue of Liberty play that you and the fiance ran on Twitter like a week and a half prior when I thought I saw everybody and their mother and brother congratulating you for getting married? So, sneaky Sharif Ishak. In fact, that's what I'm calling him next time he comes on this program. Sneaky Sharif Ishak.
Hashtag Sneaky Sharif. I would love to see that on Twitter.
Can't come on. I'm getting married today. I mean, that's a good reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
But we thought this was like weeks ago.
You know, I remember we tried to get Cody to come on the program when he got married.
Yeah, that didn't necessarily work out too well.
No, that's okay. That's okay. The marriage will last, and ultimately that's what's important. It didn't have B2BS blessing, but it's still going to last.
Exactly. It's still going to last, and also it's probably one of the shortest weddings we've ever seen. Definitely a strong candidate for world's shortest segment.
Shortest ceremony.
Yeah.
Not shortest overall party. I'm not putting words into your mouth, but that was a heck of a shindig that was thrown.
It was really nice, man. I'd never been at that particular venue they were at. I know we're kind of rambling here, but I absolutely love that venue. It's really nice.
Sports talk radio.
Yes.
Occasionally, you got to ramble on, and this is the segment that we picked to do exactly that. We've had a lot of great guests today. We had a really, really good one. I mean, Yvette Girard was peak Yvette Girard on Friday. So we're going to bring some of that back. In fact, the best of it we're going to bring back as a Q&A replay on the other side of this break. And then Clint takes you under the dome to clean up the program today. Top three things to watch for UL football fall camp. K Can't you taste it? Football season, it ain't coming. It is here. Bumper to Bumper Sports will be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
NBC Sports Radio Update starts now.
Football season can't come fast enough. Luckily, you have Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love to get you by.
Right back at it. As we come down the home stretch of your 6 o'clock hour, I'm Ben Love. He's the famous Clint D. And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. A lot of great interviews today. I hope that some of them, I guess, adhere to the standard that we set on Friday. If you missed it, our go at Rufino's on the River certainly highlighted this past Friday by about 45 straight minutes with Yvette Girard, a Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, USL, LSU, softball coach, brought both programs to the College World Series over in Oklahoma City. Truly a legend, not just in our Acadiana area, but throughout the state of Louisiana, and her name even still rings out beyond that, especially with some of the quality color commentating she's been doing alongside Lynn Rollins and others with Cox Sports Television. It really was a lot of fun. So without any further ado, we'll call it the best of, my chat with Yvette Girard.
Yvette Girard, our guest, and we're live from Rufino's on the River. A lot I want to get to, but I always am curious when coaches had the light go off and say, you know what, this might be what I want to do for a living. For you, was it the threat of working at a family restaurant? It's either I got a coach or I'm going to go cook. What was it?
Well, I was really blessed with athletic genes. All of my dad's family, everybody's very athletic. You know, growing up, I was a pre-Title IX baby in my little town of Broussard, and they didn't allow me to play. And my friends who I grew up with in my neighborhood, my boy buddies, they said that when they went to T-ball for the first time, they were looking around for me, and they kept saying, where's Yvette? She's the best player on the team. Why can't Yvette play? So I didn't get to play anything because there wasn't anything for girls. When I got to high school at Como, that was volleyball. That was it. And I always knew that I wanted to be a PE teacher because I wanted to be outside. I was really athletic. I was good. And that's what I wanted to do. And I discovered that I really wanted to coach, too. So, in fact, when I went to USL, there were no coaching classes for women. So there was a basketball coaching theory class, guys, and they told me I couldn't take it. And Bobby Green, who's still a great friend of me this day, we all graduated together. He went to the head of the department and he said, you know, this is ridiculous. Yvette wants to take this class. Why can't she take this class? So anyway, that's another story for the book, that they wouldn't even allow us to take coaching classes. So, you know, I got the bug, and my first job out of high school was at Lafayette High. I stayed there for 3 years, and it was funny because the first thing they wanted me to do was the pep squad in gymnastics. And I said, no, you got the wrong girl for that. So I ended up with volleyball and softball and coached the first softball team in Lafayette Parish at Lafayette High. It was the first year that they were going to have fast pitch in this parish.
Take out all of the program building aspects of your job, which I'm sure were the most challenging. What's the most difficult part of coaching? And I guess, have you seen that change over the generations?
Oh, my God, I couldn't have had a career today. In this day and age, I wouldn't have had a career as a female. I was very old school. It was my way or the highway, tuck your shirt tail in, da-da-da, all those things, you know. And, man, these coaches today, I don't know if it's as bad on the male side, and we can get into the portal, the transfer portal and another thing, but on the female side, many of the young women who play softball are coached by men growing up. And it seems to be okay for a man to coach hard, but not a woman to coach hard. Because I watched the Women's College World Series, and the young lady from Oklahoma State who kind of took over the country with her bat flip, you know, that's something we don't do in softball, but she did it, and everybody was criticizing her, and she was a little hyper, and she had, it was funny. The team said they had a team meeting to learn how to deal with her. She didn't even know they had this team meeting. Anyway, she's a superstar. So anyway, the male coach said he went up to the mound one day when she was just kind of off her rocker a little bit and just panicking and just, you know. And he told her, shut up, just flat shut up. And now, I mean, if you're a coach and you're this sex, they'll go report you. And saying that, you know, you, and then your administrator will say, well, you need to be positive. I said, wait, if they're lazy, I can't tell them they're lazy? No, you need to be positive. So Yvette really retired at the right time.
You saw what was, I guess, the writing on the wall.
Oh, yeah.
That's incredible. Yvette Girard joining us on 103.7 The Game. I want to get onto the subject of Cajuns baseball, and I know that potential growth, if you will, through Matt Deggs only comes in the aftermath of tragedy. So I'll just put it that simply to you. How do you look at just everything, the loss of a great friend, man in the community, and what they try to do next with Matt Deggs?
Well, I think they that was the ultimate answer to Ryan Maggard and the Cajun fans' prayers. I think they got the right man. It remains to be seen, but here's a man who I think will walk the same walk as Tony Robichaux, who coached under him, understands the Cajun culture. I believe he must have loved it. He liked it here. He's back. And in fact, I've ordered his books now. I'm going to read them. And wish I could have read them when I was coaching. But it seems like it's falling into place, if it can fall into place.
Right.
I mean, can't imagine how emotional that first, you know, game will be. But, you know, how do you replace a Tony Robichaux? You don't. You absolutely don't. But you carry on his ideals, his principles, and how he lived. And I think they made the right hire. I have the utmost respect for Dr. Brian Maggard. I wish he was an AD that I had worked for. I think that I am so sorry that since he's been here, it's just he can't catch a break. It's just one thing after another that he's had to deal with. And, of course, Tony's death is the pinnacle of it, but having to fire successful coaches, to losing Jerry Glasgow's daughter, to losing Tony, it's just been one hit after another. His wife, breast cancer. So, you know, I hugged him tight and told him not to leave us, that it would get better, and that he was the right man for the job at this time, and that, you know, things would get better. So kudos to him, because, you know, I saw it through the softball search, because he and I became friends. He came to Baton Rouge, and we visited for an entire day, so I could help him, and we could, you know, talk out some things. And he zeroes in, for those that think that he has this process, he kind of does, he zeroes in on his number one, and he just goes after him. And I was completely blown away when he came to me and talked about the position and the salary for softball. And I looked at him and said, can I come back? He said, really? You want to? And I was like, no, I was just kidding. But I never thought in my wildest dreams that my alma mater would step up to the plate like they have now. Because that's always been the problem. This is a gold mine, but you got to spend money to make money. And I think we finally have realized that.
He sat, Dr. Brian, here you're in, maybe a month ago, and did a great interview with Ruffin and myself. And I asked him off air, I said, in your job and in your role, I mean, can you ever turn it off? You know, have it always be on in this person? He said, that's the understatement of the century. You can never turn it off. And what you said makes sense to me. To have that mentality, deal with the emotion and the tragedy and in wave after wave, he's done a remarkable job.
A remarkable job. And, you know, they do things like, he comes to the games. I saw where his wife had the soccer team over at their home for dinner. I never worked for anybody like that. So, I mean, you know, I love Skip to death, and he was an unbelievable AD. And, he is. But what Brian Maggard and his wife are doing here is talk about fitting to the Cajun culture. But and she's always right by his side. So, but again, I just pray that his life becomes a lot easier so that he does not have to deal with any more of these monumental issues.
Finishing up with Yvette Girard as we're live at Ruffino's on the River. We've talked a lot about Tony, as you would imagine, on this program and throughout the community. Tell us more about his family, about Colleen, about Justin and Austin, and just your connection with the Robichaux family.
I really don't have a connection to them. They know me. I know Colleen. But Tony and I, you know, we go back to the beginning because Tony and I spent 5 hours together on his interview from McNeese. And he said, you tell me why I should take this job. And we spent 5 hours together, and, you know, we were so busy in our own worlds coaching, and but it's sort of like a good friend, you know. You don't have to talk to him all the time. You can just text him when you need something. And I mean, he was one of the few that were on my side when I left. I went to tell, he was one of, Mr. Lampson was the first, and I walked over to tell Tony. He was the second that I was leaving, and you know, he said, "Wow, you know what? You have the best of both worlds in this state." He's right now. For a long time, he wasn't right. He said, "They'll love you in Lafayette. They'll love you in Baton Rouge." And for a while, that wasn't true. But anyway, it's funny. But
he knew. Eventually.
He knew. He went through it with McNeese. I said, "How do I handle this?" And he said, "They won't understand for a while. Not for a while." But he said, "You know, as time goes, they'll understand." And everybody's got to try to do better for themselves. But, you know, we stayed in touch. If I got to the World Series, here come a text or a nice handwritten note, and I'd text him. And one time I got misquoted in a Baton Rouge paper, and I called him right away, and he said, "You don't ever have to apologize to me." He said, "You know, I know where your heart is. We're good." So, you know, unfortunately, family that well. I was gone for so long, but you know, of course, unbelievable their strength through that entire 2 days. I waited in line for 45 minutes at the Cajun Dome to get to the front. And the first thing Colleen told me was, he's still working, Yvette. And the strength that family showed in those 2 days, because I mean, I was biting on my finger a couple of times because I was about to sob in the church. So, you know, and I think that all comes from Tony. And once again, you know, his lessons, I believe, won't die because his players will pass it down to their sons, and their sons will, you know, it'll continue. So, you know, he was greatness in Lafayette.
I tried to tell you, as we frame this bad boy up, it truly was a special interview, and it was a lot of fun for me. I've been interviewing her for quite some time. That's the first time that I can recall we did that live on the radio show. Plenty back in the day that was face-to-face. I had out the recorder. She would talk. I would transcribe. You know, the whole journo bit. But this was different. This was a lot of fun in a relaxed atmosphere at Ruffino's on the River. Glad we got to run back the best of it for you. Now, here's the drill. Our final timeout of today's program, and then the full three-hour Monty, your three-hour tour on a Monday. We're going to dock, and we'll do that by Clint Domingue taking you under the dome. Cajuns football exclusive today. Coming from Clint, that means you don't want to go anywhere. We'll be right back in and back at it. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
One more time, back in from break. This is how we do it. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Ben Love, alongside the famous Clint D, bringing you home and getting you close to your Monday evening. And, of course, our pleasure to come at you live from inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Clint, I almost kind of forgot what this joint looked like. Almost kind of forgot what you look like. Glad we got reacquainted today. 4 out of 5 days, Willie Nelson-style, brother, on the road last week. The Dome. Yeah, the one over in New Orleans. Twice over, we were at Ruffino's on the River, the Taproom River Ranch. Yeah, we had a lot of fun, explored the space last week. But I'll bring you back to our trip, my trip, to the Dome, because that was all about Raging Cajun football and the Sun Belt Conference. Now, at the end of this week, LSU, UL, getting right back at it. reporting this time next week, brother. August the 5th, we are pointed downhill. We kind of already are, but it truly is football time. It goes from talking season to players report, and then reporters go take hilarious pictures of them checking into their dorm season, and then beginning early next week, it's put on the helmets and start sweating your butt off season for the players, not the reporters, not the journos, but still, it is freaking time. And I want to continue going down the path with Billy Napier and the Raging Cajuns. Year two for Billy at the helm. Some of his own ingredients to cook with this year, right? A full recruiting cycle that they'll be playing with. They've got coaches on board that have continuity. They went out and got another to coach up the DBs with a whole lot of, I guess, knowledge of what they want to do, familiarity with the university and the program, a lot of excitement. So, Clint, without any further ado, I'm going to flip it over to you. It's time to get some big picture things to look for with Raging Cajuns camp. Oh, boy, let's go under the dome.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
The Louisiana Raging Cajuns are about to start training camp on August the 1st, same time as everybody else. But, of course, there's a lot of big, intriguing storylines. I think the biggest one of them all, and you and I have talked about this at length, Ben, is what's going on in the quarterback room. Obviously, the biggest thing being Levi Lewis. Can he be a true dual-threat quarterback? This is something I talked about Saturday as well. Was that's the biggest thing that's going to determine what happens with the Louisiana Raging Cajuns in 2019. If they succeed or if they don't, that's where I'm at. That's going to be the biggest storyline heading into 2019 is whether or not we see Levi Lewis make that next step. We talk about a lot with Taysom Hill. He talked about a little bit on Sunday, talking about how much he wants to kind of progress as a quarterback as opposed to the Swiss Army knife like he is. I think whenever you see Levi Lewis, he is a dual threat quarterback. But for the most part, he'll use his legs more often than not, probably about 70% to 80% of the time. If you're a quarterback, you need to even have a solid enough arm to be able to get things done offensively that maybe you can't quite get done with your legs. And that's going to be the biggest thing, especially with this offense Billy Napier is starting to really put in. It's going to be more of an offense, more of an air raid style, a lot more passing oriented. But of course, you can't put these running backs, the stable of running backs you have, to the wayside. So you got to find that balance. And Levi Lewis, if he can't necessarily step his game up to a certain level, it's going to be an uphill climb for the Louisiana Raging Cajuns throughout the season, not just in that opener against Mississippi State. But of course, that's kind of a 1A, 1B type situation for me. And I'll give you three storylines, but this is kind of just bundled inside of the quarterback. Can the offense be more balanced towards run and pass? We noticed it a little bit better than it had been in recent years, where you saw a lot of times you saw a good bit of pass and you saw a good bit of run. But can you find even more of a balance with a guy like Levi Lewis? Like I said, this is a little bit bundled in together, but hopefully that winds up being able to work out just fine. The other big storyline for me, no doubt, is Cole Prudhomme out? How long is he going to be out for? And more importantly, who's going to fill that role? Because Cole Prudhomme, he was one hell of a center last year for the Cajuns. Can somebody fill that role and fill it well enough in case we see Prudhomme, even though it seems like more likely than not, he'll be out for the 2019 season? I think there is somebody there, and maybe it's Jax Harrington, maybe it's the freshman, the Louisiana native. This guy could wind up being the guy to replace Cole Prudhomme, at least in the short term of it. Can he do it? I would love to see it. It definitely seems like he's got all the ability to do so, but you got to be able to find that guy that can do that consistently day in and day out, and I can't necessarily say outright that a true freshman is who you need to look at and who you need to look forward to. A final storyline I think we need to look at, and me and Ben talked about this a lot, is can Joe Dillon be back to relevancy? Can he be back after injury and play, I'm going to just say it, at about a 90% clip? Can he play at that kind of level at 90%? Because he was an absolute monster before the hip surgery. After the hip surgery, he might still be dealing with a lot of that stuff and not necessarily being able to be back in a conditioning level to be playing at 90%. I think that's the biggest thing for me. So to kind of wrap it all up in a nice little bow, Levi Lewis / can the offense find more of a balance with Lewis at the helm? Number two, it's got to be Cole Prudhomme. Who's going to replace him? What happens next at that position? It's next man up mentality. And then also the final is Joe Dillon. Can he be back to being an absolute monster like he was a couple years ago?
CD, breaking it down like a fraction. And we appreciate the math, brother. Always fun when everybody contributes. I think we had one of those shows today on Acadiana Sports Station. 4 to 7 p.m. It's always B2BS. Today, no Astros. So you got the full brunt of what we had to bring to bear on a Monday. We'll be back at it tomorrow starting at 4 p.m. I've been given some assurances that Shea Dixon has survived his trip to the Bermuda's Triangle. Nothing got lost, namely not Shea, nor his lovely wife. So we should be able to flip the script on a Tuesday. But on a Monday, this is one heck of a way to kick things off. James Moran, Tiger Rag Magazine, breaking down camp and everything that Scott Woodward threw down today. You might even call it the $50 million gauntlet. At least that's how I'm choosing to refer to it. Had a lot of fun with James. As always, our 5 o'clock hour, typically packed up with some of the best we can bring. I think today was the same, right? You know that guy Ruffin. Yeah, always. We have fun with our man Ruffin Rodriguez. Of course, Ross Dellinger with Sports Illustrated. This one from the East Coast because, you know, that's where he lives now. Always great to catch up with our man Deli. And finally, at the top of this hour, Nico Yanko with the Raging Cajuns Athletic Department, getting you ready maybe a little more for the administrative side. What is going on with UL football, the awesome concession prices, and his 2 cents, right? Maybe his purview into everything that he and Dr. Brian Maggard and company have dealt with in a short stint in Lafayette, one that's obviously been filled with a fair share of challenges, obviously a fair share of tragedy, but certainly some growth and prosperity and maybe some seeds planted that'll yield that in the midst of what I just described, right? A bit of a tough time, and that is putting it incredibly mildly. So great to catch up with everybody I just discussed, this side of the basin, that side, over on the East Coast. And of course, we gave you one of the Acadiana area's finest with a Q&A replay in our last segment with the vet Gerard. So a big time Monday, that's just how we get it done. We'll be back at it tomorrow, starting at 4 p.m. Make sure you're with us. For the famous Clint D, my name is Ben Love, and you've been dialed in to Bumper Sports, always on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7TheGame.com. Have a great evening.